Here, and we are in the middle of learning Hilchos Shabbos. Today is a very important shiur about some of the background of how the development of Hilchos Shabbos came to be. So let's begin with the following. We mentioned very briefly last week that there's a Gemara Maseches Chagiga, Daf Yud, where the Gemara tells us that Hilchos Shabbos is one of those areas, Kahararim Hatluyim Besara. It's like a big mountain that's just hanging on a small thread. Because if you look in the Psukim and Chumash themselves, you find very little that is mentioned explicitly about the particular laws of Shabbos. It's not clear at all what exactly the parameters of the laws of Shabbos really are. And then you look through the Gemara and the Mishnayos and the Shulchan Aruch and all the later Svarim that were written subsequently, and you find that there's just such extensive discussion about all the details of the laws of Shabbos, and it's very, very difficult to have a clear understanding of all them. So we are familiar that there are 39 categories of melachos on Shabbos. We call those the 39 avos melachos. And from there we branch out and have many extensions and many different variations of what exactly is considered to be permissible and what perhaps is not. What's interesting is, if you look in the Chumash itself, on four occasions we find that the Torah highlights only four of these 39 categories explicitly. So all the 39 were really derived from however the Chachamim figured out to derive it, but there are four that are mentioned in particular. What are those four? The Pasuk says in Sefer Shemos, Sheshes yamim ta'avod v'yom hashvi tishbos. We have to work the entire week, and then on the seventh day we rest. Becharish uvakatsir tishbos. The Pasuk says we have an obligation to abstain from charisha, which means plowing, and katsira, which means harvesting. So those are the only two that the Pasuk mentions here. Why are those two singled out? What is that about? What's the significance of the fact that specifically Charisha and Katsira are mentioned above and beyond anything else? The reason why the Ramban and the Ibn Ezra and other Rishonim explain is because those two were such an important staple of life back in the times of the Chumash and even much later on. And yet the Torah is telling us that although everybody needs to plow and harvest in order to survive, the Torah says, you still must make sure to do those activities before Shabbos begins. We don't want a person busy the whole Shabbos harvesting and plowing, even though they need it to bake whatever has to be baked and to cook whatever has to be cooked. We still make sure to highlight those two to tell you that even though those are so essential and those are so significant and important in the daily life, we make sure that those two are also done before Shabbos begins. The next specific malacha that we're spoken about in the Chumash itself is Lo Sivaru Eish B'chol Moshe V'Seichem B'Yom HaShabbos. We're told that one is not allowed to ignite a flame on Shabbos. Now, why is that singled out? What's the significance of the fact that we talk about making a fire? Why is that more important than anything else? And the Gemara says it's actually not more important than anything else, but the reason it is highlighted is because somebody may have mistakenly thought that the only way I can be in violation of the laws of Shabbos is if I violate all of the 39 melachos in one Shabbos, which would be quite impressive if a person was able to do that. So the Gemara says, from the fact that the Torah highlights the fact that you're not allowed to do this melacha of igniting a fire, which means the Torah singles out one and says you cannot even do this, that means that even if you violate one of the melachos on Shabbos, you would already be considered to be a Mechalel Shabbos. You have already violated the laws of Shabbos, and that is the important lesson that we learn from the fact that the Torah singles out Lo Sivaru Eish B'chol Moshe V'Seichem. And finally, the last one that we find specifically mentioned in Chumash is the Isser of Hotzah, that you're not allowed to carry outside either. I'm not allowed to transfer something from one private residence to another private residence. I'm not allowed to transfer something from a private residence to a public domain. Or I'm not allowed to transfer something, Dalet Amos, in a public domain either. All of that is called the Malacha of Hotzah. Why is that specifically mentioned? Well, the Rishonim explained the reason why is because I would have thought that Hotzah is a Malacha Geruah. I would have thought that that is so insignificant. After all, what happened? Nothing constructive happened and nothing destructive happened. So I walked outside in a community where there's no Erev and I had a tissue in my pocket. What happened? Nothing at all. I walk there and I walk back and the same tissue is still in my pocket and nothing changed about the item. Normally, all the other malachas that we find are only when something happens, either something constructive or destructive. But here, the malacha of Hotzah, I would have thought, should not be included in the malachas of Shabbos because nothing is really happening. There's no change in status. There's no change in in position, there's no change in anything. And yet, the Torah says, just because you think it's insignificant, doesn't mean that it's not considered a malacha on Shabbos. And the Torah very clearly sets out for us that we need to figure out the guidelines of what is considered a malacha and what perhaps is not. And I find this to be a very difficult thing, because when you think about it just in the abstract, and you try to figure out, if I was trying to figure out what were the 39 avos malachas without having any context, without knowing what is a malacha and what perhaps is not, I would have perhaps drawn a very different list than the list that we find. Why did they come up with these 39, and where do they come from? And, for example, I walk out in the street with a small pin, not a jewelry pin. I walk out just with a pin that I didn't have to carry. I walk out with it on Shabbos. You're in violation of a malacha on Shabbos of Hotzah. And yet, if I live in an apartment building and I schlep up a stack of chairs up 6 flights of steps, there is no malacha involved in that at all. I would have fashioned it very differently. I would have said, well, that's considered to be a very tedious work, and that's something that maybe you shouldn't be involved in on Shabbos. And here is something that you don't even notice if you have a pin that's stuck in your hair, or if you have a pin that you're holding in your hand that really doesn't make a difference to anything that you're doing. I would have said that should not be a malacha, and this should be a malacha. And yet we find that the Torah tells us otherwise. The Torah says if you walk with that pin outside, you violated the laws of Shabbos. If you carry the chairs up the flight of steps, that would not be a violation of Shabbos. We know when it comes to the malacha of Bishul, when it comes to the prohibition of cooking on Shabbos, once again, if you heat up cooked food, we assume that is not considered to be a malacha. If you heat up something that is not yet cooked, that is considered to be a malacha. I would have said both of those should be very similar to one another. I would have said everything should be prohibited. If the Torah doesn't want us cooking, we shouldn't be allowed to do anything. And yet we do have very specific guidelines of where the malacha applies and where perhaps it does not. A common question that's asked is, something falls apart. Let's say I have a table. One of the legs of the table falls apart. So it's very simple to put it back together. There's a screw on it, and there's a bolt on the other side. All you have to do is just screw it back. That would be considered a malacha. And yet, even though that's the case, when I have a table that I want to extend, when I want to put another leaf in because I have more company than I expected, even though that takes 2 or 3 or 4 people to spread out the table and to carry all the different items necessary to extend the table, we assume that under most circumstances would not be a malacha, and yet screwing on a very simple activity of screwing a leg back on a table would be considered a malacha and would be forbidden on Shabbos. So it's very hard to define what exactly is considered to be a malacha and what perhaps is not. That is a very difficult thing that the Torah does not exactly spell out for us what we would define as one and what perhaps we would not. And that's why it's important that we try to figure out the categories on our own and see what is a malacha and what perhaps might not be considered. So the Gemara wants to know, are all of the 39 malachas considered to be arbitrary? How do we come up with these 39 categories? Did somebody just wake up one day and decide, you know, let's draw up a list of 39, and that's the magic number. Where does this number come from? So that's a very important question that is discussed in the Gemara itself, which is the first entry on the source sheet. Says the Gemara Maseches Shabbos, Daf Memtes Amud Beis. So they had a group of rabbis who were sitting around one day and trying to figure out, how do we keep Shabbos? What exactly are the laws of Shabbos, and what perhaps is not included in the laws of Shabbos? So the Gemara tells us, Hadar Yasvi Vikami Ba'ilahu. The rabbis were sitting around and trying to figure out, Haditnan, this that we have a tradition, Arba Avos Malachos Arbaim Chasar Achas, that we have 39 malachos, 39 categories of malacha, Keneged Mi, are they just arbitrary? Where do they come from? Who made up that list? So the Gemara tells us, Amar lehu Rab Chama bar Chanina, Keneged Avodas HaMishkan. We learn them from the activities that were done when the Mishkan was constructed. There's a discussion in the Rishonim, does it mean that these were the activities necessary to have a functioning Beis HaMikdash every single day? Or does it mean that these were the activities necessary in order to build the Mishkan? That was the Hakamas HaMishkan. But either way, it seems that we learn this from the story of the building of the Mishkan, that is very clearly outlined in Chumash. Now, why do we look at the story of the Mishkan? What is the connection between the Mishkan, or the Beis HaMikdash, and Shabbos? Why are those two things having anything to do with each other? Why do we derive all of the 39 categories of Malacha from the fact that they once built a Mishkan in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu? Why should we extrapolate from there to the laws of Shabbos? That is a very important question. And in truth, there are so many similarities that we find between the Mishkan and Shabbos itself. Most prominently, we find that the Torah itself, in two places, both in Parshas Kisisa and in Parshas Vayakhel, the Torah tells us, when we are given the instruction about building a Mishkan, we have the instruction of keeping Shabbos in very close proximity. In one Parsha, it's right before the instruction to build a Mishkan. In another Parsha, it's right after the instruction of building the Mishkan. So Rashi writes over there on Chumash that the reason why these two halachas are put together, why is Shabbos and the Mishkan put together? Because we are supposed to learn from that, that even though building a Mishkan is of extreme importance, and even though it's something that God himself wants very much, we still assume that the laws of Shabbos are the laws of Shabbos, and you're not allowed to violate the laws of Shabbos, even for a purpose as noble as building a Mishkan. That is what Rashi writes on Chumash, quoting a Gemara, that we don't have a right to violate the laws of Shabbos when building a Mishkan. But it goes so much further than that. We have so many similarities that can be found between Shabbos and the building of a Mishkan. As we know, what is the point of a Beis HaMikdash? What is the objective of having a Beis HaMikdash? So we all say on Pesach night, if Hashem only did this for us, Dayenu, but he decided to do more for us. What is the sentence that we say in describing? He brought us to Yerushalayim, he brought us to Eretz Yisrael, Uvana lanu as Beis HaBechira, and he built us a Beis HaMikdash, a Mishkan, Lechaper al kol avonosenu. The objective is of having a Beis HaMikdash is that a person should have an opportunity to gain an atonement. And the only way to do that properly is when you have a Beis HaMikdash. And the Gemara tells us in Masechah Shabbos that with regard to Shabbos as well, we find that the Gemara teaches, Kala Mispalel, anyone says Vayichulu on Friday night and comes home. And after coming home and davening and saying Vayichulu, they have a table that is set for Shabbos and they have candles that are lit for Shabbos. The Gemara tells us that the Malachim come to that person and they tell them, Visar avonecha v'chatascha t'chupar, that because you are keeping Shabbos properly, you also are given that mechilas avonos. Once again, we have that connection between the Mishkan and the laws of Shabbos. We know in the Mishkan, one of the most important elements of a functioning Mishkan was that we had to light candles every day. We had a menorah. And one of the most important elements of Kavod Shabbos is, as well, that we make sure we have candles that are lit on Shabbos, we make sure that we are mechabed the Shabbos, and we do whatever we can to show that Shabbos is unique and special. In a Beis HaMikdash, we know they used to have a very important mitzvah of achilas kachim. After a karban was offered, there was an obligation on those who offered the karban to eat parts of the karban. And on Shabbos, we have a very important mitzvah of seudas Shabbos, of eating the meals on Shabbos that both men and women are obligated in equally, to eat three meals on Shabbos. We know in the Beis HaMikdash, they had to put on big day kahuna. The kohanim who were doing service in the Beis HaMikdash had to wear special clothing. And on Shabbos, once again, we have this idea of big day Shabbos. We make sure to change our clothing and to show and to highlight the fact that Shabbos is very different and unique. In the Beis HaMikdash, before offering any service, we know that the kohanim had to make sure to do rechitzas panav yada v'raglav. A kohen had to make sure to wash his hands, his face, and his feet. And once again, in Shulchan Aruch, we find on Shabbos that before a person observes the Shabbos, they had to make sure as well to be rochets panav yadav viraglav, to make sure that we clean our bodies in anticipation of Shabbos. So as we see, there are many, many similarities between the Mishkan and Shabbos. And in the Torah itself, we do find many connections between the fact that the Torah instructs us to build a Mishkan and the fact that we are instructed to keep the laws of Shabbos. What is this all about? Why do we derive all of the halachas that govern our observance of Shabbos from the Mishkan? Why is the Mishkan connected at all to our Shabbos? So in the Sefer Or Gedaliahu, which is written by Rav Gedaliah Shur, he has a beautiful insight where he takes us back a step further. He says there are not only similarities between Shabbos and the Mishkan, but there are also many similarities that you'll notice in the Psukim between the building of the Mishkan and the creation of the world. So the Rav Gedaliah Shur points out as follows. He says, if you look in the Medrash says that there were many elements necessary to build this world, to create, to formulate the world the way God made it. So the Medrash writes, the most important elements were Bechachma, Besvuna, Uvidas. The three most important elements were the fact that God infused the world with intellect, and it was a very complicated and complex process to put the world together, as we would imagine. And you look in the Psukim, when God chooses Bezalel to be the one to construct the Mishkan, what are we told? Va'amaleo, so I will fill his mind b'chachma b'svuna uvedas. No coincidence, writes Rav Gedaliah Shur, that the very same formulation that we find the world was created with is also what's necessary to build a Mishkan. He writes once again, we find this very unusual word, Vayechulu Hashamayim Beha'aretz. After the world was completed, we have this word Vayechulu, Vayechal. It's something that we don't find that often. And yet, over here, by the completion of the Mishkan, we find the very same terminology is used. Vayechal Moshe Es HaMalacha, Vayechal Elokim Bayom HaShvi. We have many interchangeable expressions that are used in both places. And finally, the Gemara says in Maseches Megillah, that on the day that the Hukam HaMishkan, on the day that the Mishkan was finally constructed, when it was completed, Haisa Simcha Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kiyom Shenivra Shamayim Va'aretz. There was such a great joy in God's eyes, so to speak, like the day when Shamayim Va'aretz were created. So Rav Gedalia Shor points out, there seems to be something that is very important in the connection between the creation of the world and the creation of a Mishkan. Suggests Rav Gedalia Shor so beautifully. He says, God created our world and He infused it with so much. But it was then our job, as the Jewish people, to infuse this world and to instill with it sanctity and divinity. That didn't come by itself. So the same way the world was created, and that was a very important task, and that was something that had to happen, we had to come later on and make sure to infuse that world with all the Kedusha that we possibly could, to saturate it with all the sanctity, with all the divinity that was able to be brought about by the fact that we built a Mishkan. And that's what Shabbos gives us the opportunity to do every week. We are busy with all the Sheshes Yimei Amasa. We are busy every week doing whatever it is that we're doing, all the mundane activities, and finally Shabbos comes. It's as if we are given the opportunity to infuse the entire week with the Kedusha necessary to have sanctity in our week. The same way the Mishkan served as the divine enterprise of the world itself, so too Shabbos serves as the spiritual experience that we all have for the entire week. And that's why he writes, all of the laws of Shabbos are derived from the way that we built a Mishkan. So either way, as we said, the malachos, the 39 categories, are derived from the fact that we built a Mishkan in a very particular way. And as a result of that, as a direct consequence of the fact that all of them are learned from the way the Mishkan was built, there are many definitions and parameters in the malachos of Shabbos itself that are defined primarily based on the way things were done in the Mishkan. Take, for example, one of the malachos on Shabbos is bone. One is not allowed to construct an edifice. One is not allowed to build something. So what are the parameters of building? What is considered to be a building? What is considered not to be a building? So for example, let's say I make something that is only going to be a temporary structure. Would you say that that is considered to be a violation of the malacha of bone b'Shabbos? Or would you say that the only time you can violate the malacha of building on Shabbos is if I put another row of bricks on top of a building and it's going to stay there for a long time, it's going to stay there forever? How would you define this malacha of bone b'Shabbos? So the Talmud Yerushalmi writes that we have to look back at the Mishkan. When the Mishkan was built, obviously, that's where the malacha of bone comes from, because they had to construct the Mishkan. That's why we are not allowed to do any construction on Shabbos. Well, was that a temporary structure or was that there forever? The Mishkan, as we know, was constructed, and then they used to take it down. Writes the Talmud Yerushalmi, because the Mishkan itself was only of temporary nature. It was not something that was considered to be an everlasting building or edifice. Because of that, we assume that when we try to understand the parameters of building on Shabbos, it follows what took place in the Mishkan. And therefore, we assume that even a temporary building is considered to be building as well. Now, how far do we take that? If we have our children are building Legos, I don't know. In my house, it's very temporary because all it takes is for the next child to come around and knock it down. So how temporary is considered temporary and how permanent is considered permanent, one has to really clearly define. But in general context, when we talk about the malacha of bone, we assume that because in the Mishkan itself was built in a very temporary nature as a structure that was meant to be taken down. Therefore, we assume, writes the Yerushalmi as well, that when it comes to the malacha of bona in our Shabbos practically, we assume also, even if it's only of temporary nature, it would be a violation of the malacha of bona. Take a very common example that comes up. The Shmira Shabbos Kilchasa writes in the name of Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Every so often, somebody has to take a urine sample, and for whatever it is, the doctor is concerned about something, and you don't always have to go to the doctor's office to take care of it. Every so often, you're able to do it at home, or let's say a pregnancy test, or something of that nature, where you have a I don't know what you would call it. You have a, let's say, a Q-tip or something of that nature that's going to change colors if this happened or if that happened. So if everything's healthy, it's going to be blue. If everything's unhealthy, it's going to be red. Something of that nature. Well, we have a malach on Shabbos of Tzoveya. You're not allowed to color something. You're not allowed to dye something. Is this considered to be under the category of Tzoveya? Would you tell? Obviously, if it's pikuach nefesh, if it's something that's for someone's real health, then you have to do it. But let's say just a person wants to do it on Shabbos for whatever reason. Would that be a violation? Would that be a prohibition of Tzoveya on Shabbos or not? Well, writes Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, it's a very complicated question, but he says, let's look back at the Malach of Tzoveya in the Mishkan. Why did they dye anything in the Mishkan? What was the point of doing so? Well, I would imagine the reason why they did it, he says, is because they had to make all the beautiful curtains, so they would dip something into the dye and then they would color it. Why did they do it? Because they wanted the color to be this way. They wanted it to saturate into the wool or into the fabrics they were putting into the dye. Well, here writes Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, do you really care if this is red or this is blue? Does it really make a difference to you that this is now going to be colored? You don't care at all. All you want is the information that is a direct result of the color that comes about. Well, that's not really so similar to what took place in the Mishkan, he says. And therefore, he argues, maybe we have room to say that this really would not fall under the category of Tzoveya. Take a baby's diaper, right? When you have small, very young children, so very often it's hard to know when the baby needs a new diaper and when not. So they have, we're all blessed to have the diapers that have the blue strip on it, and it turns colors. Well, are you allowed to use those on Shabbos? So you'll, no, they didn't have that back in your days? Well, we are very blessed to have moved on from the days when we had to wash our diapers. So now, for those who are not familiar, they make diapers, and when the diaper is wet, there's a strip outside of the diaper that turns blue. It turns a different color to let you know that it's time to change the diaper, which is a wonderful gift that we have. We don't have to worry about it. You can just look at it every so often and know whether or not the diaper is in need of being changed or not. So this is, again, all of these are very important questions that one needs to think about. What? So the general assumption is, again, we're not talking about the Malach of Tzoveya now. Maybe we'll talk about it in greater detail at another point, but yes, you're allowed to use those diapers on Shabbos. The question is why. I don't know if we'll get to the fact about, there's a major question about using baby wipes on Shabbos. I don't know if we'll get to that today or not. But these are all very relevant questions. The answer to that is yes as well. We have to figure out why. So all of these are very important. You know, some people have a mistaken impression. They think they're nervous. I see a lot of women are not here today because people are nervous from learning Hilchos Shabbos. I said to the women who contacted me, you don't have to be afraid. There are many things that are permissible on Shabbos. You just might not be aware.
A lot of kids are off today.
Uh-huh. That's okay. I'm not offended. But there's also, you know, let's say somebody called me the other day. It was an interesting conversation. This boy went to Eretz Yisrael to learn, and he spent, I think, 2 years in Israel. He came back and he informed his parents of everything that he thought they were doing wrong in the house, and he made them turn the whole house upside down, a discussion in and of itself. And then he comes over to me this past Shabbos in Shul, and he says, you know, I have a big problem because of you. I said, what happened? He says, when I came back from Israel, I told my parents they're not allowed to do something on Shabbos because I learned that that was not permissible. And then my parents were pretty annoyed, but they got used to it. And he said, then we came and ate by your house recently and we saw you were doing it. And my parents said, the rabbi's doing it and now you're telling me you're not allowed to. So I said, what was the issue? What happened? So he tells me that he ate by my house on Sukkot and he said it started to rain. So we cleared off the whole table. We brought everything inside. And then I took the tablecloth and dropped all the crumbs onto the floor before bringing it inside. And he tells me that he learned that that was not permissible, and he came home and told his parents they weren't allowed to do it. Then they were eating by my house, and he saw me doing that, and his parents are all upset. So, it's a very good question. I told him, to tell you the truth, I'm happy to be wrong. It could be you're right. I just would like to look into it. To me, it sounds like something that I can't really understand what could be wrong with it. So he says, no, it's a malach of zoreh. What is the malach of zoreh? When you throw up something into the wind, and then, right, you used to have wheat, so you had to separate the part that you wanted from the part that you didn't want. So you threw it up into the wind, and then the wind blew away the part that was not supposed to be kept, and the wind left, everything else just fell to the ground. So he said to me that this should be a prohibition of Zorah. This is violating the Malach of Zorah. I said, but there's no wind. You're just dropping. I'm not understanding. The Malach is to throw something up into the air, and then the wind comes and blows part of it away, or separates one part from another, but here I'm just dropping the crumbs onto the floor. I cannot understand what the problem is. So he told me that he thought it was a prohibition. I haven't heard back from him yet. What?
I said that it doesn't even grow.
No, that's zoreya. Zoreya is growing. Zoreh is similar. Zoreh is when you throw something into the air. So then I said to him, very correctly, I said, maybe you're talking about zoreya, maybe you're saying it's a problem of planting, but I said, I've never seen a bread tree grow out of the ground. So I don't think we have to be concerned about that either. So I asked my wife, and she told me, she also learned this in school, that it's not permissible to do that on Shabbos. I said, what's the reason that you were taught? So she told me that the reason she learned is because you're feeding the birds. I said, I don't know. So I wasn't sure. I called my father last night. I said, am I crazy or is everybody else crazy? So he said, no, everybody else is. So he assured me that this is absolutely permissible. He said, unless you always have birds flying around your backyard and you have, you know, big pieces of bread that are going to be left that are really going to attract the birds, then maybe we would say that it's not permissible. However, if you're just wiping off a tablecloth and all you have is tiny little crumbs, birds are not going to come and flood your backyard because you have a couple of crumbs that were just dropped on the floor. They'll find the Cheerio somewhere else. And he said, with regard to the malach of Zoreh, he said he didn't think it was an issue unless there's wind and you're throwing it up into the wind. But if you're just dropping a tablecloth and letting everything drop onto the floor, once again, he thought it wasn't an issue. And he also agreed with me that he has never seen a bread tree, as I had remembered. Yes?
Back to Bona.
Yeah.
Is there a distinction? How do you make a distinction, let's say, with Legos or doing, a puzzle, mm-hmm. jigsaw puzzle.
So I would prefer to get more into the details of the malacha as we go on in future weeks, but I'm just bringing all this out as an example, but it's a very important question. So as we see, there are many malachas that we thought would be prohibited, but when you look into it further, maybe they are permissible, and there are some that we think are permissible, and perhaps when you look into it further, they might not be. So we have to be careful and understand what exactly would fall under which category, but either way, we learn all of these categories from the Mishnah. Take for another example. We have a malach on Shabbos of Hotzah. So what are you not allowed to carry outside? I would say anything. So the Gemara has a discussion. What about the Gemara Masechet Shabbos, Daf Tzadi Gimel? What about if I'm carrying a human being? Would that be a prohibition of Hotzah or not? Well, what kind of question is that? So Tosis writes, Tosis has a suggestion. He says, well, why is the Gemara not sure about this? Well, after all, writes the Balei Tosis, did they ever used to carry people in the Mishkan? No, they carried items, they carried utensils, they carried things that were necessary for the Mishkan, but they never took the coin on their shoulders and carried him somewhere else. Somebody mistakenly told me last night at the shir, what do you mean? Didn't they used to carry, when we have a mitzvah of tenufa, of waving something in the Beis HaMikdash, didn't they used to pick up the coin and wave him around? I said, no, that is not what used to happen. Sometimes the mitzvah is, the Torah says, you had to wave part of the karban, so you had to pick up the bread, or you had to pick up the flour or the oil that was being sacrificed, but you never pick the coin up and wave him around. That was not the mitzvah at all. So Tosis writes, maybe there's room to argue that because in the Mishkan itself they never used to carry people around, maybe we should say that when it comes to a human being carried outside, that would not be a prohibition of Hotzah on Shabbos, which once again, as we know today, the way the Shulchan Aruch describes it, it is a malacha, it is a problem, but there's a discussion about it. And the reason why it's a discussion is because it was not exactly similar to the way the malacha was done in the Beis HaMikdash. We have, once again, another unusual category of malacha. Yeah?
I just want to clarify something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All the melachot asurot.
Mm-hmm.
So, why are we comparing?
You're saying they did do it there, and we are not allowed to do it here. That's correct. So whatever was allowed to be done for the functioning of the Mishkan, it says we are not allowed to do today. That it's a comparison in the opposite direction, as you're correctly stating.
The way you're bringing it up mm-hmm. is because beautifying and all those examples
right. Right. So everything is learned, you're correct. Everything is learned from the Mishkan. It's just in the flip. So if they had to do this in order to construct the Mishkan, we are not allowed to do that. If they had to be Tzoveya in order to have a functioning Mishkan, we are not allowed to be Tzoveya. If they had to kill animals on Shabbos, we are not allowed to kill animals on Shabbos. So you're correctly pointing out something that I neglected to mention, but it's a very important point regardless. Let's say when you have a malacha that's done kila achar yad. So we've all heard about a shinui. I remember when one of our children was born, so two of our three boys were born on Shabbos. And at one point, I forgot exactly which one it was, at one point my wife told me, look, nothing's going on, you may as well just go to shul and you come back. There's a shul a few blocks away from the hospital. So I went to shul and I came back. Now, to my luck, I come back, I get up, I walk up the flights of steps up to the maternity ward, and I get there, and I'm waiting outside. There is nobody coming in or out of that ward. Usually you have a doctor or a nurse, every 5 minutes is going to open the door at some point. I'm waiting outside in the hallway, nothing doing. And I'm wondering, like, at what point am I, what am I supposed to do? Now, you cannot activate the door on your own. That's a malach on Shabbos. So what am I supposed to do? I'm sitting here waiting. And it's not pikuach nefesh. My wife is being very well taken care of. Not that I don't care, and not that I don't think that it's not important for their husband to be there to support his wife. But at the same time, if you wait another 5 minutes, so I assume in another 5 minutes, everything will be fine as well. So I'm waiting outside. A couple of minutes later, a boy comes in. And he's also walking up and down the hallway out there. And he looks at me, he says, what are you doing here? I said, I'm waiting for someone to walk through to open the door for me. I said, what are you doing here? He says, well, my wife is in labor. I went downstairs to get something to eat. And I don't think it's respectful for me to eat inside of the room if my wife is not able to eat. So I'm just eating in the hallway. So he says, but why don't you go inside? It's pikuach nefesh. I said, it's not pikuach nefesh. My wife is fine. So he says, oh, don't be so firm on me. And he goes, he says, let me do it for you. So he pushes the door on my behalf with the back of his hand. He says, just shinui it. It's not a problem. Just do it in a different way than you would normally do it. So then I was faced with the question, when a Jew does a malacha for you that wasn't allowed to be done, I'm not allowed to have anah. So I couldn't even go through the door. I'm standing there arguing with the guy. I said, you really didn't help me just now. So anyway, we got into a whole discussion about it. He says, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know anything about Shabbos. I said, okay, it's possible. And we got into this whole discussion, and finally someone else came through and I went. Turns out, both of our wives had children on the same day. I just went to a chumash play of my son in school the other day and saw this guy. Our kids are in the same class, and we were joking about it. But when I came back, I remember I went to Rabbi Yeager, who was the Rosh Hashiva at the time of this boy's yeshiva, and I went to him and I said, you know, I was in the hospital on Shabbos. I said, this guy knows absolutely nothing about the laws of Shabbos. I said, I didn't tell you who it was, but maybe there should be some sort of refresher course for people who are anticipating ending up in the hospital on Shabbos. It's very hard to understand what you're allowed to do, what you're not. And sometimes we don't think about it. I don't think he had any bad intention. I think he was upset by the fact that I didn't know anything about the laws of Shabbos. But I was upset about the fact that he knew nothing about the laws of Shabbos. So it's important that we familiarize ourselves with the concepts of Shabbos. So when we come to a discussion like this, of shinui, of doing something kila achar yad, not the normal way it would be done. So really, as far as the Torah concepts are concerned, we would assume that whenever something is done in an unusual way, it is not considered to be a malacha any longer. So, really, he's somewhat correct. If you go ahead and you open a door that's an automatic door that you otherwise would open with your hands, now you open it with your foot, you kick it, or you do something that's a very unusual way of doing so, that would not really be considered to be a malacha. Or, for example, if you normally write with your right hand, and now you're going to put the pen in between your different fingers and write in such an unusual manner, or you're going to write with your other hand than you normally would write, that also would not constitute a malacha of kosev on Shabbos. Or anything of that nature that you're doing in a very unusual manner, let's say carrying outside. I would normally carry something in my hands, but I decide to carry this under my armpit. So that's not the normal way of you to carry anything. So the Gemara says you wouldn't violate the laws of Hotzah. Now, if that's the case, it means I can go through a Shabbos and just do everything that I would normally do, just do it in a little bit of an unusual manner. So the Chachamim were concerned. What kind of Shabbos is that going to be? So you're going to be typing on your computer as long as you lose, you know, one finger at a time, and you use your knuckles or something like that, and you can turn on all the lights on Shabbos as long as you use a fork to turn it on instead of your hands, and you're allowed to do everything on Shabbos as long as you do it in an unusual manner. So the Chacham said, come on, that's ridiculous. It doesn't make sense. You're not going to have a Shabbos. And therefore they said, we are going to institute that even if you do it in an unusual manner, it's also forbidden. But it's not a Torah prohibition. Why is it not a Torah prohibition? Because in the Mishkan, nobody would think of doing something in such a strange way. In the Mishkan, every time things were done, they were done in the normal way that they were supposed to be done, in the efficient way. And therefore, we assume that you can extrapolate from there that when we do something in an unusual way, it is not really considered to be a Torah prohibition of a malacha on Shabbos. It is only considered to be a malacha midrabanan, because the Chachamim were concerned, if we don't institute something, you can have people walking around the whole Shabbos doing everything they would normally do. So in the summer, I brought Rav Asher Weiss to Camp Simcha one day, and part of the trip there, I asked him to please meet with all of the medical staff. So we were talking there in the infirmary, which is almost like a hospital there. So we were talking about all the different malachos that take place on Shabbos and how we're supposed to deal with that. So obviously, if it's pikuach nefesh, so you need to do whatever needs to be done. But let's say it's not a direct pikuach nefesh. So we try to minimize the malacha as much as possible. Well, how do you minimize it? So one very easy way to minimize and knock everything out from being a malacha is to do it in an unusual manner. So that's a very easy way to do it. So we were talking about the different ways of how, let's say, a very common question that comes up is, so I'm a doctor in a camp like that, and there's a lot of information that you're receiving on Shabbos from patients coming in, from campers who need help, and from people who need to be medicated. So the question is, am I allowed to enter that information into the computer system on Shabbos, or would you say, well, I'll keep it in my mind, and after Shabbos, I'll put it in? Not a good idea. Not a good idea. When you have hundreds of people that need to be very well taken care of, it's not a good idea to say, I'll wait till after Shabbos and assume that I'll remember everything and then enter the information. So we assume you probably are allowed to enter the information. However, when doing so, you should try to do it with a shinui. So he suggested, he said, if you put a thimble on your finger, that would already be considered enough of a shinui, because that's not the normal way to type. You would never do it. Obviously, you're going to type much slower because, you know, you have to use something that's making it very uncomfortable. Or he said, you use your knuckles as you type instead of the tips of your fingers. That would be a very obvious shinui. He did suggest, though, that when you're on call and you're a doctor and they're calling you to go to the hospital for an emergency on Shabbos, he said, I would suggest that you don't drive your car with your feet as a shinui. That might not be a good idea. But anyway, a shinui is something that is a halachic concept, and when it's necessary, we certainly should use that. But the question is, when it's not an emergency, we aren't just allowed to do everything with a shinui. Otherwise, we would have no Shabbos. So once again, here's a category within the context of malacha where we find that because in the Mishkan it was done in a certain way, therefore we can extrapolate from there how we are going to observe Shabbos. The Gemara tells us as well that if you have shnayim she'asu, if you have two people that are engaged in a malacha together, and that's not the natural or normal way to do a malacha, we assume, that would not be a Torah prohibition either. So let's say the normal way for me to carry a pen would be for me to carry it by myself. If you would walk down the street and see two people holding the two ends of a pen, you would say there's something very strange going on. Therefore, if two people carry a pen outside on Shabbos together, we would assume that is not really a Torah prohibition of Hotzah because that's not normal. That's not the way that one would ever carry something of that nature. What if you have two people carrying a heavy table outside on Shabbos? That's the normal way to do it. The person cannot normally do it by themselves. Yes, you have a bodybuilder who can carry it him or herself, but that's not normal. The normal way is when you have something heavy that needs to be carried, you have more than one person carrying it at the same time. And therefore, we assume it depends what kind of item you're dealing with. But generally, if you have something which can normally be carried by one person, we say if two people are doing it, that would not be considered a malacha. Or if you have something that's being written, and you have two people holding the pen together, writing it together. So that's not the normal way to do anything. That's not the normal way to do a malacha. We would assume that shnayim she'asu already knocks it down as well from being a general malacha, and it knocks it down to be only a rabbinic prohibition as well. One final thought that is very important for the laws of Shabbos as well is something also that is learned from the Mishkan. When the Mishkan was being built, we are told that it had to be built Lasos b'chol melechas machsheves. I see that I neglected to do anything on this sheet today. So we have number bays. Lasos b'chol melechas machsheves. One has to be careful when building, when constructing a mishkan, that it was done with melechas machsheves. What does it mean, melechas machsheves? It means it had to be done with concentration, with specific intent. We are building an aron. We are building a shulchan. We are building the kalim. We're doing everything. We're dyeing all the materials necessary to make all of the things that are needed for a functioning Beis HaMikdash. And from there we learn that the only way one can violate the laws of Shabbos is if you do something that is also considered to be a meleches machsheves. If you have intent, if you understand what it is that you're doing and you want that outcome that you're doing, then we assume that is considered to be a prohibited act on Shabbos. But if not, if it is an unintended consequence, as we'll see in a minute, that would be permissible. So let's try to understand this. The Gemara tells us as follows. Number Gimel. We have a malacha on Shabbos of Choresh. What is the malacha of Choresh? So it generally means you're not allowed to plow. Now, most of us in the room, I assume, don't know how to plow. So the malacha of Choresh doesn't apply to us? It does. How does it apply to us? So the Gemara says Choresh doesn't only mean that you go into the machine and you start plowing the ground. Choresh means doing any activity that will either soften the ground or make it readier. I don't know how you say that. Make it more... What? More ready? Readier is not a word? Make it more prepared for the activity of planting. So, making a hole in the ground is considered to be a malach of Choresh, because now I'm preparing the ground. Someone could potentially come now and put a seed into the ground, or softening the ground, or dragging something and making a charitz, making a... some sort of... not a hole, but some sort of line, a row in the ground, that would also be considered to be an extension of the malacha of Choresh. Now says the Gemara as follows, Reb Shimon Omer, what happens when I do something and I have no intent at all of changing the ground? How many of us are interested in planting and doing anything that's going to soften the ground? So let's say, Shabbos afternoon, I want to bring a big lawn chair from this side of my backyard to the other side of the backyard. Now, it's very heavy, so I'm not going to pick it up over my shoulders. I just want to drag it from one side of the field to the other side of the field. Now, every once in a while when you do that, it's going to make a hole in the ground because of the pressure, because of how heavy it is, whatever it might be. Sometimes it's going to cause the ground to change as a result of you're dragging it across the grass. So the question is, a malacha is certainly occurring. A malacha might happen, but I have no interest in that malacha happening at all. All I want is for the chair to be on that side instead of on this side. It's too heavy for me to carry. So is there something wrong with dragging that chair from one side of the field to the other when a unintended consequence might be that there will be a hole made in the ground, which seemingly should be a malacha of Choresh? So the Gemara discusses the issue. Let's look at number Gimel. Reb Shimon Omer, Reb Shimon is of the opinion, Gorer Adam Mita Kisei V'Safsal, a person is allowed to drag a bed or a heavy chair or a couch on the ground, as long as you don't have specific intent to be doing something to the ground. So even though an outcome might be that there will be a ditch in the ground, or not a ditch, but there will be some sort of furrow that will be created in the ground, that is not a good enough reason to say that this is not permissible on Shabbos. This is the opinion of Reb Shimon, because after all he says, we require meleches machsheves. In order to violate one of the laws of Shabbos, you have to have intent for that which you are doing. You have to understand that which you are doing. You have to want that consequence. But here, where you have no interest in the consequence, where you don't want it, and seemingly you might actually not want it at all because it makes your backyard look worse. So in a case like that, Reb Shimon is of the opinion you don't have to be concerned at all. That is not considered to be a malacha, even though the same outcome might come out, the same outcome might result as if you were doing it with intent. That is what he says. However, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. So this is a discussion. Rabbi Yehuda says, what do you mean? The end result is the same. If I would go with my shovel and I would dig out a furrow in the ground, I would violate the malacha. So now instead of a shovel, I'm using a chair. What's the difference whether or not you wanted to do that activity? The bottom line is, the result is the same. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda have the opinion, one cannot drag a chair on the ground outside on Shabbos. After all, it's going to result in the same malacha that you would have done had you come with a shovel. So this is the discussion in the Gemara. How do we paskin? Well, here's the problem. The Gemara Maseches Erev and Daf Memhei writes, anytime you have a disagreement between Reb Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda, the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. Except for this case. Except for this case. So says the Gemara, we always paskin like Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, except for this case when he disagrees with Reb Shimon with regard to the laws of Shabbos. So here the Gemara tells us that we paskin like Reb Shimon. And the halacha is, as long as it's an unintended consequence, you would be allowed to drag this chair, you would be allowed to do that activity, because you have no intent at all for that malacha to be done. Take a very common example. Some women wear high heels. So every so often when you wear high heels, not always, every so often when you wear high heels, it makes a hole in the ground. Now, you certainly don't want the hole. It's a pain in the neck for you because you keep getting stuck when you walk. your shoes are getting dirty, and there's holes in the ground, so you don't want that. So it's certainly a davar she'ena mischavin. You have absolutely no intent at all for the result that's happening as a consequence of the shoes that you're wearing. However, not every time that you wear those shoes, not every time that you take a step, is there going to be a hole in the ground. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. And therefore we assume you have a right to wear those shoes and to walk on the grass, even though once in a while that is going to happen, because it's what we refer to as a davar she'ena mischavin. I had absolutely no idea that that was happening. I had absolutely no interest in the consequence at all, and therefore we would assume that something like that is permissible. However, if you have a case where you know with certainty that this is going to happen every time, then we would consider that's what we refer to as a psik reshe. That means the Rambam has a case. It's a very strange case. The Rambam says they didn't used to have toys. Like, you know, some people here remember, they didn't used to have diapers. So back in the days, they didn't used to have balls. They didn't used to have toys for the kids to play with. So what did a kid do on a Shabbos afternoon? Listen to this. So the Rambam says, the toy that they used to play with was the head of a chicken. I don't know. They used to throw around the head of a chicken. So they would take a chicken that was slaughtered, they would take the head of it, and they would use that as a toy. So the Rambam says, here we have a problem. We have a long Shabbos afternoon in the summer, and we forgot to prepare the head of the chicken before Shabbos. What are our kids going to do? Well, I have a great idea, says the Rambam. Why don't you shech the chicken on Shabbos, cut off its head, and now you'll have a good toy for the kids. What do you mean? How can you do such a thing? You're not allowed to kill an animal on Shabbos. Yeah, but says the Rambam, I have no interest in the animal being killed. I just want the head. Happens to be the only way to get it is if you kill it. But that's not at all the intended consequence. Well, writes the Rambam, that's ridiculous. Because the only way to get a head is if you kill it. And therefore, because you know with certainty that every time you do this act, that's what's going to happen, you don't have a right to do that. You don't have a right to do that. So even though, he says, even though we have a concept of a davar she'ena mischavin, even though we have a concept like Reb Shimon said, that when you drag something across the floor and it's going to make a furrow in the ground and it's going to make the dirt different than it was before, or you're wearing your high heels and sometimes it's going to cause a hole in the ground, even though that's permissible because you didn't want the unintended consequence. However, if you know that every time you're going to wear those shoes, this is going to happen, or if you know that every time you're going to get the head of a chicken, the animal is going to be killed as a result, or you know, for a more common example, that I forgot to turn off the light in my refrigerator before Shabbos, and you know that every time you open that refrigerator door, the light is going to go on. So even though you don't want the light to go on because you don't care, you have enough light in the room without that bulb going on, since you know every time you open it that that's what's going to happen, that would not be permissible on Shabbos. Even though it should have been a davar she'ena mischavin, it should have been something that I had no intention for the light to go on, it doesn't make a difference to me if the light goes on, yet we assume that it's considered to be a problem on Shabbos because that's what we call a psik reshe. That is something that everybody knows that every time this is going to be done, that is what's going to result, and therefore it is not permissible. For another example, the Gemara says, if I have a deer runs into my house on Shabbos. So, unusual case, we don't generally have deer in this neighborhood, but let's say I have an animal runs into my house on Shabbos, a wild animal, and now we say, hey, how nice, I have a deer in the house. I would love to, I don't know, to do something with the deer after Shabbos, maybe to skin it, or maybe to, and I never have the chance to catch a deer because I'm not an expert deer catcher, but here I have a great opportunity. The deer is in the house anyway. The problem is if I leave the door open, the deer is going to run right out the same way it came in. So I have a great idea. There's a malacha of tzeda on Shabbos. You're not allowed to trap an animal on Shabbos. Now, am I just allowed to close the door? Am I allowed to just close the door? So you say, of course not. That's trapping the animal, correct?
You always close the door.
What?
You always close the door.
Oh, so here's the question. What about the deer runs into my house, now it's roaming around the whole house, I don't know what it's doing, and then I need to go to shul. So I open the door to go out to shul, now I close the door behind me. So the unintended consequence was that the deer is now trapped in the house. But it is clear and obvious that every time I open that door and close it, I'm going to violate the malach of tzedah. There's no question about it. Well, says the Gemara, in such a case, even though it's a davar she'ena mischavin, you're not at all thinking right now, when you're walking out to go to shul, you're not at all thinking about whether or not the animal's getting trapped. Still, the Gemara says that would be a problem because that's what we refer to as a psik reshe. One of the questions that we mentioned last night that I really don't have a good answer for is, I had a mistaken impression about, I didn't grow up with a dog, I didn't grow up with a pet. But I always thought that a pet that is trained to live in one's home knows that when the door is open, you don't run out. People told me last night that that's not the case. People told me last night that the dog loves to run out whenever the door's open, even if it's used to your house and your family, it just likes to run around, like kids like to run around and go out of the house also. So the question is here, given that reality that the Gemara says you're not allowed to do anything that you know every time you open or close the door, it's going to have that, even if it's an unintended consequence. Again, my dog is roaming around the house. Now I walk out to go to shul and I close the door. Well, haven't you violated the Malacha of Tzeda? That's a good question. So all the Svarim that I looked at last night say, no, because the dog knows to stay in the house. But then I was told that's not true. The dog doesn't know to stay in the house. So I'm not sure exactly what the answer is. I asked my father last night when I spoke to him very late, and he said he never looked into the laws of Tzeda well enough to have an opinion on the matter. But he said if that's really the case, then you have to think about it. What do you do about having pets in halacha? What? Oh, so if the dog, maybe, I asked my father last night, maybe when the Gemara talks about opening and closing a door on Shabbos and that being a violation of Tzeda, maybe that was in the days when they had homes that consisted of one room. So you have a dog runs into the house, you want to trap the dog in the house, so you close the door. But nowadays, where the dog could be in 25 other places in your house, just because I'm walking in and out of the front door, that really is considered to be a violation of Tzeda on Shabbos? So I don't know, this has to be explored. It's a very good question. And for those who might have pets, it's something that's very relevant, yeah?
I'll tell you a funny story.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. 2 weeks. I opened all the doors and all the windows. I couldn't pee them. 2 weeks.
Look, you made it very comfortable for the squirrel, I guess. You have a nice house.
I even had a service. He couldn't help 2 weeks.
Uh-huh. 2 weeks. Right, so that brings home the point. I'm wondering if when Chazal said the Malach of Tzeda by opening and closing the door, maybe that's in the homes they used to have, but maybe today the definition of the malacha might be very different because our homes are structured very differently. So if you have a dog or a squirrel running around somewhere in the house, maybe that should be very different than the way we have it today. So,
but the dog is not being trapped. The dog lives there in that place.
Oh, right.
It's not a strange animal that doesn't belong
there. Right. So that's a very important question. How do we define the parameters of what would be considered a malacha of tzeda and what perhaps might not? The bottom line is, let's just review quickly. We mentioned today that the laws of Shabbos, the 39 categories of Malacha, are learned from the laws that govern the building of the Mishkan. And from there we extrapolated so many different concepts into what might be the parameters of our Malachas as we know them. Number one, we said if you do something bishinui, if you do something in a very unusual manner, it's not the way it used to be done in the Beis HaMikdash and the Mishkan, maybe we should assume that might be permissible on Shabbos. If you do something kilachar yad, if you do something shnayim she'asu, if you do something not normal for two people to carry something together. We mentioned about meleches machsheves, that if you have something that is done in which you do not have intent for the consequence, so we mentioned that generally that would be permissible if it doesn't happen every time. However, if you know that it's going to happen every time, then that's what we refer to as a psik reshe, and even though you might not want the consequence that is resulting, it is still something that might not be permissible on Shabbos. We mentioned that when it comes to the malach of bona b'Shabbos, we also extrapolate from the laws of building the Mishkan that a binyan l'sha'a, even when you have a temporary structure, that would also be a violation of bona, because after all, that was the nature of the temporary structure in the Mishkan, because the Mishkan was put up and the Mishkan was taken down. And therefore we can extrapolate from their rights, the Yerushalmi, that also might be a violation of the malacha of bona on Shabbos. We did mention also that when it comes, let's say, the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa to a urine sample or something of that nature where something changes color. So yes, you might be in violation of the Malacha of Tzoveya on Shabbos, of dyeing something, of coloring it. But on the other hand, it's not at all similar to the way it was done in the Mishkan, because after all, in the Mishkan, when you would dye a particular garment or a particular item, you wanted that the color should stick. But here, I don't really care if the color sticks. All I want is the information that results after the color changes, after the color indicates what it is that we want to know, that's all I want. So these are all very important concepts when we come to the laws of Shabbos. And Mirtzah Hashem, next week we will continue about this idea of Darashena Mischavin and Psikreshe, what would be permissible and what perhaps might not. Using baby wipes on Shabbos, you might violate the malach of Schita, of squeezing on Shabbos and extracting the fluid from it. So there's a lot for us to talk about, and Mirtzah Hashem will continue.